Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. I know, and I think most people agree, that every incident in life, whether it's good or bad, has within it the seeds of a love letter to somebody. It's got the seeds of a letter of gratitude, of thank you, of I remember. Let's see what Izzy Pivnik has to say. I know you were a teacher, you said.
Yes.
When did you start teaching and where? And first of all, where did you grow up?
I grew up in San Francisco for the most part.
Uh-huh.
And in my senior year in high school, the folks moved to Los Angeles.
Oh.
So I stayed there, finished high school, came back to San Francisco.
Oh, you did?
I always knew I wanted to be a teacher and that San Francisco State was the place to go.
What did you say you always knew you wanted to be a teacher. Now, I have a particular opinion, which on everything, but on this, because so often you hear people saying to your children, well, get your teaching credentials so you'll have something to fall back on. And I think that's just the kiss of death for students. You want people.
And the teacher, too.
Yes, and the teacher, too.
I can tell you one horrible story.
I would like to hear it because I know that teaching is a very specific art itself. And you go to it because that's, oh, thank you for bringing that up. I could cry.
Compassion and understanding.
But you say that you always knew you wanted to be a teacher. I'm so touched by that.
I knew from the time I was in junior high.
And why?
I just had a couple of teachers that I said they shouldn't be in teaching.
Oh, because of the, exactly,
and,
yes.
And some 20 years later, I was their supervisor when they went to the high school to teach, and I said those poor kids.
Yes.
So I knew I wanted to be a teacher. I thought I wanted to be a physical ed teacher, but I really didn't finish as a physical ed teacher. I finished as a math major.
Oh, that's my favorite.
And my physical ed was a minor, but I used it throughout my career.
Uh-huh. So you did teach math.
I taught math.
You know, if I were to do it over, that's what I would be doing.
Really?
Absolutely.
And I feel for the kids right now because all of a sudden they're being asked to know all the things about math. And it usually comes in algebra.
Yes.
And now they're being asked to do it in sixth grade and you know, they're not ready. Nobody has done anything with them about it.
So how are they supposed to answer questions if they haven't been taught?
There's some bright kids in every class.
Oh, that's true.
And that helps make the difference.
So you knew you wanted to be a teacher.
I knew I wanted to be a teacher. And I became a physical education major and a math minor. And I hesitated to take swimming till my senior year.
Why?
Because I didn't know how to swim, and I was afraid of the water.
Oh, and is that because you were raised in San Francisco, swimming wasn't so
It wasn't
taught?
In high school. It wasn't a requirement.
Yes.
So I, on the last day that I was in the swimming class, I had to learn to tread water and jump off of a 10-foot diving board.
Were you scared to death?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I decided I'm going to go in
math
change my major.
Yes.
Change my major.
Uh-huh. And you can't drown with math.
Meanwhile, as a teacher, I had I taught physical education, and I taught folk dancing, which was my favorite, and that's one of the things that propelled me into administration.
And you taught folk dancing in your curriculum? I mean, at the school you,
In physical education, although I taught games and all, I taught physical education.
Yes.
And on open house, I take the parents out there and teach them.
Ah.
And that is what resulted in my getting my first promotion.
And so your first promotion to what?
Assistant principal.
Now, were you sorry about that, to give up the classroom or no?
Not really, because I was earning $1,800 a year.
Oh, so that's a bad thing.
I just got married and
yes.
You know, that was a factor. But I taught continuous. Every summer at the college level.
Now, what... Okay, so you had a couple of horrible stories that I think we might be able to learn something from.
Yeah.
What?
Well, there was one young lady after my first year of being an assistant principal. The principal said to me, Izzy, I want you to go in and supervise her because she's failing. And rather than let her serve the whole term, talk to her. So I did talk. I observed her class for about 3 days. Then I talked to her and I said, you're not going to make it.
Uh-huh.
She said, you mean it? I mean, she was happy about
yes,
it.
Yes, yes.
And I said, why do you say that?
Uh-huh.
She says, my father is a scavenger on the truck.
Yes.
And he wanted something with a little prestige.
Wait, so when you say scavenger, just for people who hear this not in San Francisco, that's the recycling and garbage collection, the Sunset
Absolutely.
Scavenger. They're great.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I talked with her for a while. She said, Mr. Pivnik, I never wanted to be a teacher. My father wanted me to be the teacher. And she told me some stories.
Yeah.
And I said, would you mind if I called your father?
Uh-huh.
And I did. And I told him she's never going to make it as a teacher. Excuse me. And she wanted to work like at Macy's or Bergdorf Goodman, any of the places. And she would be good at that.
Yes.
But not with kids. So she resigned, and we got another teacher for the class, which salvaged that class. But I'm sure that there are other parents that persuade their children to go into a
yes.
field where they have no desire to go.
And no particular talent at it. I think it's a real talent to be able to give over information the way people want it, to make it exciting. Yes.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure we've all had our share of duds as teachers, and we've all had our share of great ones. Yes.
Yes.
So what are some other...
Well, one day I was in front of the class, and I was doing a spelling lesson,
mm-hmm.
and I pronounced the word, and the young lady raised her hand and said, Mr. Pivnik, that's not the way it's pronounced. So I said, well, will you pronounce it? And she did.
Uh-huh.
Two ironic things happened.
Two what things?
They are kind of ironic to me.
Oh, ironic things happen, yes.
One is, her mother was PTA president. Uh-huh. I didn't know it.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the year, I was named the outstanding teacher my first year at the school. Many years later, when I was the associate superintendent, I was visiting with the teacher I recommended as the outstanding teacher in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And when the young lady opened the door, I didn't really recognize her, but it was the same young lady
mm-hmm.
that had
yes.
been in my class, told me I didn't pronounce the word correctly, and I said, is this ironic? Her mother recommended
yes.
me. I'm now recommending her husband.
You had the insight and grace to ask her her opinion. You didn't silence her.
Not at all.
Do you remember the word?
Yeah, it's a judicial term. I can't remember what. But
she knew how.
She knew how to pronounce it, and she was one of the stars in the class.
Yes.
Of course, she was bright.
And you didn't mind being told that?
Not at all.
Yes, yes, that's lovely.
Those kids. You know,
what school were you at?
Daniel Webster up in Trevor Hill, and I still am in communication with some of the
kids. In San Francisco, yes.
Some of the kids, yeah. rather. And I go to lunch with one of the girls
oh,
who
nice.
Worked in the library for
uh-huh.
me. So it was a great start in my life. Now my granddaughter lives directly across the street from that school. So it's
yeah.
interesting.
So teaching is kind of a two-way thing. I mean, if you're smart, you learn a lot from your students, right?
Oh, and how.
Yes.
And
so what was your specialty in math that you taught?
I taught basically algebra because mm-hmm. when we went to the eighth grade,
mm-hmm.
I had seventh and eighth grade at the time, and these kids picked it up quickly.
It's amazing how many people, first of all, are scared to death of it.
Mm.
They love crossword puzzles, and they do the decoding things in the newspapers. And they're good at that, and then they say, oh, I can't do math. And they do it every day.
Absolutely.
I mean, it doesn't take a genius to see that if you want one T-shirt at $5, but, oh, you've changed your mind, you want two of them, then you need $10.
Go back to the classroom.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh,
my goodness. So what happened? What was your life like after that?
After that, there was an open house, and the parents filled the auditorium. And I spoke to them, and I said, if you'd like to come down, I'll do some folk dancing with you.
Oh, let's talk about that.
So 600 parents, folk dancing in the yard. And 2 days later, the superintendent called me in and said, Izzy, if you can do that,
mm-hmm.
you can be an administrator.
Oh, because you had those leadership abilities to get. What folk dancing were you teaching, and where did you learn it?
Well, I was a fifth ed major at college.
Yes.
So I took folk dancing as one of my
classes. Oh, I see. So you took it and you loved it.
I loved it.
But who's folk dancing?
My wife was a jitterbug and I'm the folk dancer.
Oh, gosh.
But I went to San Francisco State and I just loved it.
But I mean, was it across the board folk dancing from different countries?
Different countries. And some that I really knew from having done them myself.
Yeah.
And the kids loved them, but we get calls from the parents in the neighborhood saying, he's teaching dirty dancing. Well, I was teaching, put your left foot in, put your left foot out, and
yeah,
turn yourself about.
It's so funny.
And they called the Board of Ed, say, that man out there is teaching the kids dirty dancing.
That is so bizarre.
Yeah.
Yes.
But
that was a wonderful movie.
During recess time, I would teach the kids kickball or soccer or volleyball or whatever. But I called the music supervisor and I said, I have a terrible voice, but I have some kids in there with beautiful voices. So I call on them to lead the other children. And I teach folk dancing as my music and phys ed too. So supervisor said, I'm coming out. She says, hey, just keep doing what you're doing.
Now, so you taught middle school.
I taught middle school.
Because
K-8.
They did not have, as I recall, men teaching grammar school. That was strictly a women's business.
I was a third man.
Oh, ever. So, but you did teach grammar school then?
Absolutely.
What grade?
I taught, well, my student teaching with third grade.
Uh-huh.
And then I did a stint at sixth grade. I ended up with a seventh and eighth combination.
So that's junior high school. I mean, we had men teachers in junior high school.
Yeah. But in that school, I was...
Why do you think that was, that men just chose never to go into grammar school teaching? Because now you see wonderful men in nursery schools and what?
I wouldn't have thought of going into elementary school.
Why?
I did my practice teaching, third grade and sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And sixth grade was an enjoyable experience. Third grade was kind of rough because they came in with little knowledge.
Yeah, so you want somebody already based in something that you can build on.
A challenge. I started the volunteer program.
Oh, yes.
And in that volunteer program, I just wrote it up in the throwaway paper. Anyway, I got 20 people right away who volunteered. And the first thing we did is we began reading stories on tape.
Yes.
And these kids could then take those tapes home.
Now, when you say reading, you mean listening to them?
Listening to them. Parents came
in.
We had one crazy woman from Palo Alto. And she was telling me what she was doing. And I said, you can't do that. So in order to get rid of her, I shut the program down.
Oh, gosh.
But a month later, I reopened it under a different title.
Uh-huh.
And that's still going in San Francisco. I actually went back to Washington to talk to people about putting volunteers in classrooms because teachers don't want anybody in their classrooms.
Do you think we could be, let's talk about why don't they? Because they don't want to give up
They don't want to be observed. They don't know how to use them correctly.
Ah, that's the thing. In other words, those assistants aren't just the ones to take the kids to the bathroom.
No.
Yeah, so what's a good use of an assistant?
Good assistant is if you know there's a child who's having difficulty with arithmetic or reading or spelling, assign that person to...
Oh, so one-on-one special attention.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And the district never had enough money to do it. They did it with special ed.
Mm-hmm.
But with some of the kids up in the eighth grade, they were having a lot of difficulty. They didn't know how to dissect a word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes that's the key to a lot of words.
Yes.
And the volunteers loved it. They are now... They're called the San Francisco Educational Auxiliary.
Mm-hmm.
They've been in there now. I've been out of that school for 30, 40 years now, more than that, and they're doing well.
That's nice. You're smiling. I wish this is when you need a TV moment so people can see the joy in your face at all this.
It's really a great satisfaction.
Yeah.
I'll go off on a tangent, if
Please.
I may, for a moment, but it's related. There are the couple that live in this building that have an autistic child, plays music beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
So I go down, I'm in the mail room, I hear her, and I go in, listen. This last time I was with her, the mother said to me, to her daughter, go over and play. She went over and played like a little six-year-old, she's 21. Came up here and I wrote letters to I'm on a foundation board.
Oh, let's hear about this.
I'm on a foundation board that helps children when an organization develops a program. So I've helped a few people develop their programs. And in her case, I wrote a letter to each of the board members saying you have to experience this for yourself to see this youngster who's 21, who plays beautifully, but when she's a child, reverts. She goes in the corner, and she's jumping rope, and she's doing all.
Oh, I see. So when she sits down at the piano, she's another being.
Absolutely.
Some other part of her is speaking.
Now, the mother did tell me that she was in a special school for a while, but at age 21, they ship you off. So I said, you know, we don't ship anybody off. Here is a child that was somebody who could be with her, is going to make it. You know, she'll just make it. Her brother is married, lives in New York.
Mm-hmm.
These parents are elderly.
Yeah.
God forbid when they die.
That's always
what's going to happen to this kid. And now my daughter buys a house in Puerto Santa Rosa. Her husband's a doctor, and they wanted them closer to the hospital, so they had to move up there.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, their neighbor has an autistic daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you just don't know how tough it is on a parent to have a child that doesn't understand you.
Right.
And
yes.
So on the foundation board that I serve on, called Spellchef Foundation, I've been on it for over 35 years now, and we fund programs, and I've been instrumental in getting at least three of them,
uh-huh.
and in every case, I've gotten them the Jefferson Award for what they are doing.
Oh, yes. I'm familiar with a lot of the Jefferson Award winners.
I'm now on their board of all things.
Oh, okay.
I was referring more people for.
You know, there's so much good in this world. I'm happy to say that I've had a lot of them as guests on Love Letters.
Oh.
So I became familiar with, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, there is a man who helped our adults,
yes.
buy the house in Santa Rosa.
Uh-huh.
Santa Rosa. And he was telling me what he does. He volunteers at a school,
uh-huh.
goes out at every recess to avoid bullying.
Oh, my goodness.
And
yes.
I wanted to give him the award.
Yeah.
But I had to have basic information, and I never got it.
But
I keep telling my kids, when you see him, tell him I need that information
you
to
know,
submit.
Bullying now. I mean, people are more aware.
Number one problem.
It always was a number one problem. And I guess it doesn't really matter, but I think it would have continued to be a number one problem had that first family not turned around and sued the school for not taking action. Then suddenly everybody was aware of how awful bullying was.
Absolutely.
You know, it's been going on forever, and it's still going on.
Oh, yeah.
I can
cite a couple of very sad cases.
Yes.
That I would take
to yes. And, of course, it's taken a new turn on internet bullying.
I stepped out of Safeway. There were some kids. They were in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
They had a table, and they had pencils and pens and
mm-hmm.
crayons.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, if you make a contribution, you can have anything you uh-huh. want on the table. So I said, well, what's your purpose in doing this?
Mm-hmm.
They said, we need to raise some money to avoid bullying in our school.
Well, how does raising money, how do they go about that?
They had these tchotchkes that you put out.
No. How does money help bullying?
They can buy a person who's out in the yard.
Oh, they can have somebody come in and train or make people aware.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Shouldn't teachers be trained in that from the get-go? Because it happens in classes.
Yeah, it happens in classes, but more in the yard.
Yes.
And I could tell you horror cases of what happened to kids.
Yes.
And mother, for example, had cancer. Child lost her hair.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And we were able to get her a wig. They have something in the city that allows you to get them that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the kids in the yard would pull the wig off, throw it around.
Mm-hmm.
And it was terrible. And for me, the funny thing was, I had lived across the street from the people who owned the laundry. And when I used to go to the laundry to take my stuff in, then I'd hear these tales. I sometimes never observed them.
Yes.
So anyway, things like this can happen.
What do you think is the best way, as a teacher and an administrator and a father and a grandfather and a nice person, to handle something like that? What do
first
you do with the bullies?
First be aware.
Yes.
First be aware. And which of them are doing, and then call to them, and it's a one-on-one conversation, I think. And then you really watch to see what happened. My granddaughter went through some bullying by name calling. She doesn't have a father, and my brother had just died. And she was telling me what she thought were her friends and what they had been doing to her. So my brother's daughter, my niece, called the parent, mm-hmm. the friend of hers. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, my daughter wouldn't do that.
Yet her daughter did.
Please talk to your daughter. So she talked to her daughter. The daughter acknowledged it, called and apologized.
Oh, yes.
And it's a nice story. At the time it was happening, this little child, who's an adopted child from Russia, couldn't understand why.
You know, you don't really ever get over that. That's always with you.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. So
I think that's a really good place for love letters to come in, by the way. When kids are involved in bullying, and they just have to write an apology, written apology, because when you write it down in your own handwriting, you're getting into it in a way that you don't. Anybody can say, oh, I'm sorry. And I don't know how deep an I'm sorry goes.
And what you just said is important, because he said, you know, they won't acknowledge the fact that they did it. But when the mother accosted them, they acknowledged it, and the mother was smart. She says, we're going over right now.
Oh, see, that's
parent involvement, you know.
Yes, but that's an intelligent, nice mother.
Oh, and how?
And I wonder if it's different with boys, because I think sometimes boys who are bullies have fathers who are not just bullies themselves, but are kind of proud of the kids for being tough guys.
Yeah.
You see
that
sometimes.
You have a problem there. We had one of those kids, and I don't remember his denomination. When I visited her home, she said, I hope you're not bringing me more bad news.
Uh-huh.
And I said, he speaks out in class when he should. He does some minor things.
Uh-huh.
But I just want you to know that there's been some improvement in him and so on. So she said, well, you know, the last time somebody reported him from school, it's a custom in his country, apparently, burn the kid's hand.
Oh, my goodness.
So I said, that's not why I'm here.
Uh-huh.
I just appreciate the fact that you listened and you talked to him. And if he was doing something that wasn't right, I'd say, I hate to call your mother. Please, Mr. Pivot, don't call my mother.
Yes.
So, you know.
So you have kids that are terrorized.
Yeah.
Passing it on to others sometimes. Oh, that's awful. You mentioned that you had written letters to the board members of the Stolzaf Foundation to go hear this autistic girl play the piano.
I probably have copies here.
Okay, so that's interesting that you took to the letter. I mean, I'm so about doing things in letter form because it lasts longer and I think it's more powerful. Do you write letters yourself now at this stage?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, who do you write to? What kind of things do you?
Well, first of all, when my wife died just about a year ago, I couldn't believe the people in the building and the friends I've had. And I was up every night till 1 o'clock just writing. So my sister-in-law said to me, Izzy, I'll help you write. And I said, what would you write? Say, thank you for your contribution. I said, wait a minute.
Yes.
It's not me.
Right.
Everything is personal for me.
Yes.
So I wrote this. Now my kids got after me.
Uh-huh.
And they said, Dad, I'm glad you're writing the letters, but you don't have to do it that late every night. You can take time. People will understand.
Oh, yes.
So I'm still writing thank
you
notes.
Oh, good. Okay,
I'm
because a thank you note is a wonderful kind of a subtype of love letter that you're either expressing your appreciation and gratitude for what was done, you're acknowledging the love they had for your wife.
Absolutely.
And for you.
Right. So
and people keep those.
I keep them.
What do you have in your?
I have all the letters that have been sent to me.
Uh-huh.
Well, one of the problems was I didn't know some of the people. They're from the building, and they wrote, and of course.
Oh, in sympathy for your wife's passing.
Yeah.
But you have love letters from students?
I had letters. In fact, Marilyn and I were, that's my wife, were downtown one day, and we ran into this young lady. And she said, Mr. Pivnik, would you come to our house for lunch one time, and I'll invite. No, she didn't say anything about inviting. So we said, sure. So we went, and she had 12 former students.
Oh, how wonderful.
And it was wonderful, and it was such a nice thing. Since then, we go to lunch at least every 3 months, at least.
Oh, with this group?
Well, not all of them show, but it's like being back. And I gave her the job of being librarian. She wasn't the librarian. She just had to put the books back on the shelves in the right place.
Good teachers are with you forever. I remember all of mine. And, you know, interestingly enough, I don't remember the bad ones. They fade.
Yeah.
But the good ones stick with you.
Absolutely.
You remember yours growing up?
I don't remember. Well, I don't know where I came from because I'm a dual personality, I'm afraid. I am truly an introvert. On the other hand, I apparently give out extroverted kind of something. And
now, what does that mean to you, introvert? I mean,
and as an introvert, if we went anywhere, Marilyn and I went anywhere, and it was new to me, the people, I would be at the back wall.
Because you were being thoughtful or you were actually shy?
Shy. He would go in and she'd meet people, and pretty soon
and
she'd say, I'd like you to meet my husband. And that's the way it went all out. I called her the door opener, because she opened those doors. And we formed a group at Beth Sholem, and it was about 100 couples, not 100 people. And I was the first president. You know, and I'm so braggadocious, I guess, but I'm so pleased with where my life has taken me in terms of people.
What a wonderful thing to be able to say.
Oh, God. They asked, one of the women who puts out a newsletter here said, no, she didn't say it. The other person who worked with her said, Izzy, when this gal comes back, it's her birthday, will you be at Master Ceremonies of that affair? So I wrote some stuff and put it together. So they've asked me now at every dinner, would you say some things, Izzy? Well, the people, I try to think of games and stuff that they could get involved in. But I'm truly an introvert, but I love people.
Oh, see, that's because when I called you on the telephone, you were a stranger to me. And I don't know, within maybe a minute and a half, I felt like we'd known each other forever. You have a familiarity that's trustable. Maybe that's what people see, for starters. Now, you have grandchildren, you said.
Oh, they are great.
I'm sure. How many do you have?
I have a daughter, the youngest. Who was a daughter who was a teacher for a short time. She taught for 11 years, and she's a little thing, and she was teaching junior high school. And she tells a story of time to sell the chocolates. And she left the room for a minute, and the chocolates were gone and no money. So she said to the kids, I'm going to leave the room again. I'll be back in about 5 minutes, and I expect to see. I couldn't believe it came out of her mouth. I expect to see chocolates or money.
Good for her, yes.
And she came in, all the chocolates were back and went. Our son, and then she went into jewelry. She still does that. She's got a program on TV someplace. And then she went back to teaching. And she married a doctor who was very artistic.
Yes.
And what a couple.
So, all right, my question is, you have grandchildren, have you written to them letters? Do they have letters from you?
They have letters from me.
Good.
And I have letters from them.
Okay. And the reason I'm asking this, my experience has been that when we're gone, when those children are 40 and they find those letters, it's going to bring you back to them. And letters in handwriting somehow at some point help people through grief.
Isn't that interesting?
Don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it. You know, I found a letter, and it's in my mother's handwriting. It's like she's here. It's in my grandpa's handwriting. Oh, I'm glad you do all that.
I have letters from the children who say to me, and I'm really appreciative of it. They said, what a great granddad. They call me Poppy.
Yeah.
And they write all these things, and this is what I've learned from you.
Oh, so wonderful.
And I brought my granddaughter into Cape KRON for a while, for a summer, and she's now working in New York with one of the big...
Oh, so we didn't talk about that part. We just have a couple of more minutes.
Okay.
Your time at KRON.
I got too much in me.
Well, maybe we'll do another one.
KRON, I was in the hospital. I had been volunteering at the volunteer center. I went to hospital. They called the volunteer center. The manager at KRON called, and the manager said, call him. He's in the hospital at Mount Zion at that time. So he called and he said, do you think you could start a program here for people who have problems? Something like, there's a guy that does it. I don't know his name right now. And I said, if I've opened a school, I can.
I was going to say, people know to come to you to start programs.
Yeah.
You do emanate something.
Yeah. So I do. Anyway, started the program there. I was there for 14 years.
Wow.
And when I came there, I said, I'm happy to do this. He says, oh, no, we're going to pay you $15 a week. And then second week, he said to me, did you notice you got a raise? 25. So I stayed there all the time. And when they no longer gave credence to the program by management, mm-hmm. I said, it's time for me to go. Uh-huh. Meanwhile, I was asked to go to KPIX. So I went to KPIX, started a program there. Some of those volunteers I was there for.
Now, the program was what, actually?
Ask Izzy.
Oh.
If you have a problem, call me.
So you would stand up for people and help solve problems.
And the problems were unbelievable. And I personally would go out and try something that I had heard.
Yes.
Just so I could make sure I knew it was right. I'll give you a quick example.
Please.
You go down to a place near Costco. Uh-huh. And sell TVs, radios, all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. And the problem was the person bought a TV and it wasn't working in their home. And they brought it back, mm-hmm. and the guy says to them, where's the box?
Oh, God, that's an issue, yes.
So I just wanted to make sure that that was really true.
Yes.
So I went down and I bought a television. Uh-huh. And I said, is there anything you want to tell me?
Yes.
He says, no. I said, well, in case I have to bring it back.
Uh-huh.
Fitz, just bring it back.
Uh-huh.
I came home, took it out of the box, went back. And I said, for some reason, it doesn't work here. He says, where's the box? I said, is that what you forgot to tell me?
Oh, my goodness. They can do without a box. Oh, good for you. I just feel like you're the Lone Ranger here riding in to solve. This is great.
I tell you one quick story again. The guy bought a brand new Volkswagen.
Where's the box?
Without a box. He drove it off. He kept it till it needed to be serviced. He brought it back. They put it up on the hoist, and it falls off. So the guy calls me. Because at the service place, and they say, we'll fix it up and get it. He says, no, I want a new one.
Yes.
And they said to him, if you talk to Michael Finney, is the other one, uh-huh. or to Izzy, we won't do anything about it. He says, we're warning you now, don't talk to any television stations. So he came back and told us.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the car's in front of the station. We've got a picture of it. And Joe Ducey was in the reporter. And he goes over to the Volkswagen people and he says, this guy is deserving of a new car.
Uh-huh.
He bought a new car.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't have it now because
uh-huh.
of you.
Yeah.
They gave him a new car. Uh-huh. Can I tell you one lousy story?
Yes. Everybody loves lousy stories. They're so satisfying when they have a resolution.
One young lady went, she was a volunteer at our place.
Mm-hmm.
A young lady, school, still in high school. She went to get a Botox treatment.
Uh-huh.
And they were injecting plaster of Paris.
What?
So we quickly got Joe Ducey. And said, Joe, could you get out there and see what you can do? So he gets there, and the woman, by that time, is aware that we're on her tail. She goes down to San Diego and gets herself a job in a beauty salon. Well, he has her arrested.
Yes.
But can you believe injecting?
No, I can't. So she was just a crook who wasn't authorized to do a Botox treatment. She was doing something else. Is that the...
Yeah. Apparently, I don't know if she knows anything about Botox, but...
She set herself up as a...
A beautician.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Now I have to tell you, I have had a problem with urination. So I'm in there for several treatments, and then they say, you know, there's something new on the market now called Botox. And we'd like to try it on you. I say, wait a minute.
Keep it.
I've already had my experience. I don't want Botox.
No, that's not a place for plaster of Paris or
not
anything.
For sure not.
Oh, and also, when somebody says, I've got a new treatment, you want it out there for a couple of years to see how it works, right?
Absolutely.
Everybody listen to that? Yes. Oh, thank you for doing this with me. I learned a lot, and I learned something about you, and I am just going to be grinning for a week. Thank you.
And
thank you for talking about the letters you have and that you've written and
the power of those. I'm just beginning to start filing my stuff. It's such a mess.
Oh, yes.
And do you have a card?
I do. I'm going to tell you, you know, if you go to places like the Russian Hill Bookstore, any nice stationery store, they sell beautiful boxes, gorgeous boxes for you to put letters in and store things.
They're not in beautiful boxes, but
I can guess they're not from the way you're saying that they're in a mess.
Our daughter said, "I will be here to help you throw out what you don't need and so on." Well, thank God she's never been so busy in her life. Her daughter has a year-old child.
Oh, so she hasn't been here to do it for you.
No, she hasn't been able to come. The only thing she does, thank God, because when I was first writing checks, I was making a lot of errors. And so she said, "Dad, you can't write checks anymore." So she writes checks for me.
That's so funny, because if you can teach math, you can write a check and then substitute and subtract the amount. Yeah. That's very funny.
I think what happened is I paid the same person.
Okay, so just a kind of a memory lapse. Yeah, it's not like, yes, okay. Well, thank you, dear. I'm just stammering my way through this because it's been such a pleasure. And your life has encompassed so much. And I just want to remind people that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, every one of your moments is a reason to write a letter to somebody. And by the way, I've said this before, that one of the great letters, I think, are the memory letters to your teachers. And if you can find where your older teachers, your former teachers live, drop them a note.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yes. Well, you have some contact with your former students, so you know what that feels like.
I have some contact with some of the students.
Yes. Drop a teacher a note. And if that teacher is no longer here, find out where that teacher's children are. Write to them.
What a great
idea. Just keep something going. Okay, well, I'm going to say goodbye now, and I will talk to you all later. And thank you, Izzy, for doing this again.
I'm going to do something about finding out some of the best teachers I've had.
If their children are, wouldn't that be something?
Oh, golly.
Their children or grandchildren?
They're old enough to have them now.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It takes some detective work, but what fun that would be.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, dear.
Thank you. I love your nails, incidentally.
Thank you. They're, for those of you who don't know, they are a lovely periwinkle blue. Thanks.
I don't know the color, but it's sure pretty.
Okay.
Well, I have one caregiver, and she insists once a month, she says, "Izzy, it's time to do your nails."
By the way, I noticed that somebody's, you're taking good care of yourself there.
But I have to tell you the quick story is that I was at breakfast with her. This woman, my sister-in-law, actually, she leaves the table, she comes back, she says, "Hurry up, Izzy, you have an appointment at the barbershop." So I go to one of them, so she said, "Come on." So she takes me over there, and I'm sitting there, and the gal is doing my nails. One of my teachers is outside in the window, and she's going like this. Every time I see her now, she goes.
Wiggles her little fingers at you. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so the beat goes on.
Yeah.
It's everywhere you turn.
Tell me the name of your program again.
It's Love Letters Live.
Okay.
And it's just centered around the power of letters and people's lives and people's stories. And there are always love letters involved. And those last longer than we do. And by the way, I just want to take a moment to say, they're still the best stored information storage system, because you put them on any kind of electronic device, and that technology changes. And what you write today isn't going to be accessible in 50 years. But we have letters that are 150 years and 200 years old, and they look like they've been written yesterday.
You're kidding.
So we can pass those down, but your floppy disks, toss them.
Oh.
So, okay, I just want to make that point. All right, everybody, goodbye. We'll talk to you later. Thank you.